Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. And I welcome you from all over the world. All of our syndicated stations, everyone listening, we're going to have a lot to share today, including starting, of course, with the latest on health and nutrition, the benefits of apple cleansing. Fluoridated water calcifies your arteries. The use of aborted human cell lines in vaccines is linked for the first time to a rise in autism, a very interesting discovery. We'll share investigator Brian Shohavy of Health Impact News' research on this, and this was published in the Journal of Public Health and Epidemiology. So it's not a secret, but why isn't it being discussed? We'll discuss it. Soft drink consumption will age you as fast as smoking. Yeah, 10 reasons to avoid them from Prevent Disease, and a lot more on health and healing. Then today, from our environmental segment, we're going to look at what happens when if the Republicans control both the House and the Senate. There's a claim out that the Republicans will pass the worst NAFTA-like trade deals ever. Well, I believe that it's not just the Republicans, but corporate Democrats also who are behind this, just waiting till after the election to do this. Now, we've done a lot on the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, the TTIP, and the Trades in Service Agreement, the TISA, as well as the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They're all NAFTA-style agreements. They're all investor-state dispute settlements, meaning that the government of the United States could be sued, or any state government sued, if a major corporation anywhere in the world, and there are over 75,000 corporations in Europe alone that would be participating, wants to market a product, and that product has been deemed to cause cancer, to destroy the environment, they would be able to win millions, hundreds of millions or billions of dollars in a settlement. So why would any reasonable, responsible legislator think about passing such a trade deal? I forgot. We don't have reasonable, responsible legislators. With a few exceptions, we have people who are acting on behest of the special interest groups, and that's been going on for a long time, so we'll talk about that. We'll also take a look at something that most people are not aware of, and this is from Common Dreams. U.S. cities criminalizing sharing food with the homeless. 21 cities have adopted ordinances restricting where and how nonprofits, churches, and individuals can share food with homeless. From Nadia Prupas, staff writer. We'll talk about that. Let's begin. You've heard me mention many times that I believe that the apple is one of nature's most perfect foods. And as such, apple pectin in the skin of the apple is where most of the healing in an apple occurs. Hence the importance of organic apples and, if not organic, at least washing them thoroughly. And then taking the skin of apples, ideally about 6 apples a day, you peel the skin. You don't throw the rest of the apple away. You can juice that. But you take the skins and you put it into a blender and you blend it into a nice smoothie. And the polyphenols are then released into your bloodstream and they work marvelously inside the cells. Your eyes, your brain, your heart, your intestine. It's all around good. Now, this just came out today. I wanted to share it with you. It's an article entitled "The Benefits of Apple Cleansing from Prevent Disease." And it talks about the apple helping to regulate digestion, helping allow your liver to function more efficiently, and how a particular acid called ursolic acid that is in apple peels helps you burn calories more efficiently. We also know that there are phytochemicals, and there's lots of epidemiological studies that have linked the consumption of apples with reduced risks of some cancers, cardiovascular disease, asthma, and diabetes. In the laboratory, apples have been found to have very strong antioxidant activity. They actually inhibit cancer cell proliferation. In fact, years ago, when I first came to the city, one of the very first books that was given to me by a man named Vic Boff, he had a little tiny health food store on the Upper West Side, around 100th Street. And he said, Gary, he said, you would appreciate this, because I used to go in there every day to get my juices. And so it wasn't even the size of a book. It was almost like a pamphlet. And it was called The Grape Cure. And in it was all about a person who had cured themselves of cancer using nothing but a grape, lots of grapes and grape juice and grape concentrate. And that kind of stuck in the back of my mind. And in my travels, I would hear about people using the apple cider vinegar and the raw honey to help them rebalance their biochemistry in the morning. And then people would have what was called the apple cure. In upstate, when I purchased my first farm, which was a small, rundown place, it was the only thing I could afford in Stone Ridge, and thousands of people from this audience would later come on the weekends in the summer and enjoy learning about homesteading and gardening. It was the first organic teaching farm in New York State, first food co-op, the High Falls Food Co-op. And the person I purchased it from, it had been in her family since the late 1700s. And she was in her 80s. And she lived in a small house that was no longer part of the farm. They'd been cut off, and she had this beautiful little pond, 3-acre, 4-acre little pond that she overlooked. And I'd go over there, and we'd sit and we'd talk, because she reminded me of the people I grew up with in West Virginia, just very humble, very positive. And every time I went over there, I could smell this wonderful tea that she had made, and she loved sassafras, and that was one of her favorites. Well, when I was growing up, sassafras, too, was given to me with honey in it, raw honey in it. It was one of my favorites. And she talked about, if you want to keep healthy, you got to keep regular. And we, meaning her family, always kept regular by having an apple cleanse. And I said, well, what exactly was the apple cleanse? She said, well, we would have presses, and we would press out the juice from apples that we grew here, and we would bottle it up as cider and keep it in the cold storage, and then that would become vinegar when it's no longer drinkable. Then we would use it for all kinds of things. We'd put it on bee stings, put it on moss stings, cuts, and it's great natural antiseptic. By the way, she's correct on that. And she told me about how they would use bee propolis, this very, very dark. It's almost pitch black. It looks like tar. It tastes terrible, but wow, it's one of nature's most perfect natural antibiotics. So anytime someone comes to me who has a cold or the flu or sore throat, you bet, roll that organic bee propolis mixed with some manuka honey and some green tea with the juice of one lemon. That'll do it. Watch what happens to your sore throat after sipping that throughout the day. And then take in some wild oregano oil as well. And she's telling me about all these things that they made, and she showed me the building that was the press house where they do the pressing. And I said, why do you have to have a house to do this in? Because I'd pressed on my own homemade press. In fact, there's some photographs of that on my website. You'll see me in my work, Bib Overhauls, pressing out apples. And she said, well, because the deer, the moment they smell that, they come over and they just stand there and they get in the way. But we use the pumice, the pulp, she says, and that's what we would use for our apple cures, because that's what really was powerful. And every day, whenever they made it, she would scoop that up, and her mother made sure that everyone had like a quart, she said, of that apple pulp. And that's what kept them regular, healthy, helped with digestion. She said it was just the best cleanse. Turns out she was right. And it's wonderful when you talk with older people, especially those in their 80s and 90s, who are healthy. Scott Nearing and Helen Nearing, two of the most respected and beloved couples that were living a completely natural life off the grid, I knew. They visited me there in Stone Ridge. I visited them on their farm. And we shared a lot. They had a lifetime of experience I did not have, but I had benefited by being one of those kids that loved to listen to older people talk. And they were older people. And they talked about apples. So I'm just saying, put apples up there at the top of your health list. And the skin is where it's at. Here's the latest. They were giving examples of how good a superfood that apples are because of all the flavonoids that it contains and the quercetin that it contains. Now, that's good for your skin. And right up there, reducing heart disease better than statins. And so get your apples, peel them, blend them, and drink them. Now, something we don't want to drink is fluoridated water. Here's the latest reason why. This is from the University of Zaragoza in Spain, and it says the following. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Toxicology that a chemical, fluoride, in the water supply, it's been there for decades, supposedly to protect our teeth, but according to the newest study, shows, quote, demonstrated cardiotoxic effects, which include the calcification and hardening of arteries. And they found this out at the university in the study. Quote, from the study, fluoridation of drinking water dramatically increased the incipient aortic calcification observed in rats with experimental chronic kidney disease. So, just remember, 90% of digested fluoride is taken up by the intestines and distributed throughout the body. You don't want fluoride in your water supply. And finally, the use of aborted human cells in vaccines. Who knew? This is from Brian Shohavy, and we thank him for his research on this. He found that in the Journal of Public Health and Epidemiology, a highly respected open access academic journal, that there has been an increase that has been monitored and studied that shows that they were using human aborted cell lines in the vaccines. Quote, I reviewed the full-length research paper and found that the methodology of the research was very thorough. The research tracked not only the introduction of aborted fetal cell lines introduced into vaccines used in childhood vaccination scheduled in the United States, but they also track standards for autism diagnosis as published in Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. And they found that one of the claims made for the rising rate of autism in the United States today is that it is primarily related to changes of diagnosis. That they found that this was not correct. What they found was that it's these, quote, autistic disorder change points years are consistent with introduction of vaccines manufactured using human fetal cell lines containing fetal and retroviral contaminants into childhood vaccine regimens. This pattern was repeated in U.S., U.K., Western Australia, and Denmark. Thus, rising autistic disorder prevalence is directly related to vaccines manufactured utilizing human fetal cells. So, that's the latest. One more reason to challenge what we're told about that. Well, I did mention soft drinks. So I will tell you this, since I said that it was consuming soft drinks will age you as fast as smoking. The message, of course, from Prevent Disease is that stop smoking and you're going to be healthier. We agree. Everyone agrees with that. Daily, quote, consumption of just a half a liter of soda is linked with 4.6 years of additional biological aging, comparable to that of smoking. The study found that drinking soft drinks is associated with cell aging, suggesting sugar sweetened soda consumption might promote disease independently of its role in obesity. The study revealed that telomeres, the protective units I talk about all the time on the show of DNA that cap the ends of chromosomes and cells, were shorter in the white blood cells of surveyed participants who reported drinking more soda. The findings were in the journal, American Journal of Public Health. And the length of telomeres within the white blood cells, where it can most easily be measured, has previously been associated with human lifespan. In lay language, short telomeres, shorter lifespan, more aging, more disease, heart disease, diabetes, cancers. Quote, this is from the study. Regular consumption of sugar-sweetened sodas might influence disease development not only by straining the body's metabolic controls of sugar, but also through accelerated cellular aging of tissues. Professor, University of California in San Francisco. Quote, this is the first demonstration that soda is associated with telomere shortness. This finding helps regardless of age, race, income, and educational level. Telomere shortening starts long before disease onset. Further, although we only studied adults here, it is possible that soda consumption is associated with telomere shortening in children as well. So, drink your soda, live a shorter life. And then they give the reasons for it. Dehydration, because caffeine is diuretic. Higher calories. Caffeine addiction. Researchers at Johns Hopkins University say when people don't get their usual dose of caffeine from soda, they suffer from a wide range: headaches, fatigue, muscle pain, and inability to concentrate. Acid, the amount of acid in soda, is enough to wear away the enamel on your teeth. Weight gain, artificial sweeteners, mineral depletion, especially the colas that contain phosphoric acid and caffeine, which drain calcium from the bones. Diabetes. So, that's that. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall. We all know that those who speculate in the casino capitalism of Wall Street, derivatives, credit default swaps, they're using massive amounts of debt. They're not using their own money. If they lose, we pay. If they win, we benefit not at all. It's a game system. One person who's concerned is Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent of Vermont. Here's what he has to say on stopping speculation.
Every American understands that the very, very high price of oil and gas is having a very negative impact on our fragile economic recovery. Also, in rural states like Vermont, Montana, and other rural states, it is wreaking real hardship on working people who in many cases drive long distances to work. In Vermont, certainly, it is not uncommon for people to be driving 50 miles to their job and 50 miles back. When the price of gas gets to be $3.80 a gallon or $4 a gallon, it really hurts. And when wages are stagnant, when many people have seen a decline in their paychecks, high gas prices has just taken another chunk out of their limited income. And it's something that, as a Congress, we have got to address. The same Wall Street speculators who caused the worst financial crisis since the 1930s through their greed, recklessness, and illegal behavior are back at it again, and this time they are ripping off the American people by gambling that the price of oil and gas will continue to go up and up and up, and in that process are driving the price of gas and oil up and up and up. Sadly, and this is the important point, this spike in oil and gasoline prices was entirely avoidable. This was avoidable. The Wall Street Reform Act that we passed last year, the Dodd-Frank legislation, required the Commodity Futures Trading Commission to impose strict limits on the amount of oil that Wall Street speculators could trade in the energy futures market by January 17th of this year. We passed legislation that said to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission that you've got to impose rules by January 17th with strict limits on excessive oil speculation. Mr. President, 6 months have come and gone. They have not done what they were required to do.
Nor were there any consequences. You've heard me say many times on this program, and I've challenged every single person who we've had on as an independent politician, whether it was Dennis Kucinich or Ralph Nader or Ron Paul or Rocky Anderson, Jill Stein. I ask them the same thing. Would you outlaw all trading in commodities that are essential to life, including food, oil, water, and gas? And they all said yes. No other politicians would say yes because so much money comes from those. And when people in those industries, through their front groups and foundations and think tanks, saturate the airwaves of so-called experts, then the public is confused. We should not allow the price of a gallon of gas or the cost of water or the control of water to be in the hands of speculators. Their only incentive is profit. They do not have to be on the other end of what it means to not be able to afford water as they are in Detroit or food. 2 billion people on the planet right now are food insecure because of that. Next up, the U.S. is criminalizing sharing food with the homeless. This tells us a lot about our exceptionalism, doesn't it? At least 21 cities have adopted ordinances restricting where and how nonprofits and individuals can share food with homeless. This is from Nadia Prupas from Common Dreams. Quote, dozens of U.S. cities have criminalized feeding the homeless. As the number of U.S. cities or criminalizing sharing food with the homeless continues to rise as a result of the abject poverty that Americans are finding themselves in, there are fewer and fewer places for those who need food to find it. The other day, I had a homeless person on our program. One of the things he said is he came to the west side because on the east side, when on a bitterly cold sub-zero night when it was snowing last winter, as people were going in and out of one of the ATM little kiosks, he went in just to keep warm for a few minutes, and the police arrested him for trespass. No one else was arrested for trespass. And I thought, how inhumane, how cold-hearted would you have to be? How removed from your spiritual self would you be if you were a cop and you saw someone who was struggling with life? They knew nothing about him except he was trying to keep warm, but that became a crime in New York City. The trouble is, that is not an unusual nor an exceptional experience. I remember 2 years ago being down in Florida. I was at a step down where the homeless vets come and are given some form of help by retired vets. There were vets from the Korean and the Vietnam War they're helping. There's no funding. It's all volunteer. But they would find sleeping bags or boots, or one guy would give him a chiropractic adjustment, another person was a dentist to at least give him an idea what was wrong with the mouth. Couldn't do anything, but at least could do an exam. They were getting a haircut, and they'd put up a portable shower and a bag of food. And there was a food truck from a church group, and the church group told me this. And they said, you know, it's unfortunate, but we used to feed the homeless every Sunday over at a shelter that is used by everyone in Orlando in the big city park. And then they told us that if we did not stop feeding them, we would be arrested. Now, mind you, this was a mainstream church. And they said they'll arrest the pastor, they'll arrest anyone. You can't feed the homeless. But here was the question. Could you feed anyone else? And the answer was yes. You couldn't feed homeless vets. Even though the church fed them, there was never one single problem, and they cleaned up after them, so no one even knew after 3 hours they'd been there, and it was everyone else can go in there and be fed, but not homeless vets. And I thought, wow, that's unusual. And I challenged the mayor. You'll see it in the film where I challenged the mayor, and he's called out on it. How inhumane we have become towards those who are in most need. And yet we talk about being an exceptional nation. Well, when you have dozens of communities that will arrest you if you feed the homeless, and they even threatened to arrest a pastor on a cold night last year where it was snowing out. He invited some homeless people into his church to be warm, and he was threatened by the police. You can't do that. We have become a police state, but before we became a police state, we became indifferent to what we should be as human beings. I'm very disappointed in any community that has ordinances, because you just don't pass an ordinance. There are hearings on it. There are people who are there elected to pass these ordinances. What does it tell you about the mindset of people who have power in our society? And finally, on environmental issues, this is from Dave Johnson. It says, quote, trade deals like NAFTA have helped create terrible inequality by outsourcing jobs to low-wage countries so investors can pocket the wage difference. He is correct on that. Quote, these corporate trade deals also create corporate courts that bypass the borders of democracy and place billionaires and corporations beyond the reach of governments when it comes to deciding on laws and regulations that protect citizens. Ditto, he's correct on that. There are more of these NAFTA-style deals being negotiated right now. These are much bigger than the trade deals that have already created such inequality in corporate power. If Republicans take the Senate and keep the House, they will pass these new trade deals and clinch this deal worldwide, and President Obama has already indicated he will sign them. Okay, here's what this man is not adding in here. All of these deals have been accepted by our Congress. That rare legislator like Alan Grayson from Florida, he fights them. A handful fight them, but the vast majority of Republicans, Democrats, are all in favor of taking away America's sovereignty and giving it to corporate interest through NAFTA, CAFTA, and now the TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, and the TISA, the Trade and Service Agreement. All these have one thing in common. It would allow, for the first time, corporations to have sovereignty over all of our laws. Not even our U.S. Supreme Court, state courts, federal courts. No jurisdiction would be able to have a final word. The final word, once we sign this treaty, comes from an independent panel of judge arbiters who are selected by the corporations and therefore would be siding with them on all these. And then no matter how bad the policy you want, if you want to go in and strip mine our virgin forest, you'd be able to do it. If the products you want are toxic and cause cancer, we couldn't stop you from marketing them. There would be no vestige left of protecting the consumer. Now think about that, all you good corporate Democrats who believe that Ralph Nader was an embarrassment and shouldn't be elected to anything. We wouldn't have any of these treaties. We would have rescinded CAFTA and NAFTA had Ralph Nader been elected president. But then again, we wouldn't have had the Iraq War. We wouldn't have had the national security spying state on us now. We wouldn't have anyone monitoring our mail. We wouldn't be having stop and search. None of this would have happened. So much for learning anything about hubris and arrogance. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to take just a moment, raise a few dollars for this wonderful station with something that's brand new. And I'm going to ask Eutrice Lee to step into the studio. This is where we had something that was good and we've made it better. By the way, good news, the Cocoa Magic Bar, we're getting our final test batch in today or tomorrow. And if it passes, I'll have it in about 4 weeks. It's been out of stock for 7 months because I want to make it better. Well, I've made it better, but we ran out of it in that 7 months, but we'll have it back. But this is something that's really important. It's the Gary Knoll Twin Slim Water Filter, the countertop. The purpose of the filter is to remove a wider range of toxic contaminants that have been detected in many water systems in the U.S. over the past 10 years. The unit consists of one designer housing that contains two filters in series, and the ceramic is first, then the chemical heavy metal filter. The second gets rid of everything else, and it's very compact. It looks terrific, and it works better than anything else that I know out there. And the major advantage of the new metal chemical filter, it can reduce very toxic contaminants 95% or better than other filters. Can't even begin to touch that. So the Gary Knoll Twin Filter can get rid of pharmaceuticals, herbicides, pesticides, heavy metals, including fluoride, lead, cadmium, chlorine at high levels, gets rid of it. And testing was performed at several independent laboratories to confirm the reduction to contaminants. And the ceramic is capable of removing parasites and bacteria at greater than 99.99%. And it can remove small particles of dirt and sediment. It's cleanable. It improves the bad taste and odor of water. And so there's nothing like it. Remember, it's two filters, and it's multi-staged. It's a ceramic carbon filter, and the metal John filter is it consists of calcium carbon matrix having positive and negative charges that attract metallic ions, and it has a very high absorption surface area to reduce chloramines and pharmaceuticals and chemicals. So it's been laboratory tested by water quality testing labs, and it's tested at NSF at 42 and 53 protocols, 99% reduction. So you cannot, in my opinion, find a better water filter in the world. There's nothing that can come close to it. And we know that our body's about 72 to 74% water. So now you know you're going to get clean, clean water. And it's on special sale today. But I've invited Dr. Roy Spicer, who has a PhD in microbiology and is an expert in water and water pathology, graduated from Rutgers University. And I've asked him to do independent analysis because I don't want you to believe that because I'm saying something that it's true. I want him to tell us the latest. Nice to have you with us today, Roy.
Nice to be on your show, Gary.
Roy, tell the audience everything that you know about this filter. First and foremost, is there any other commonly sold or advertised water filter that you know of that can compete with this and what it does?
Well, first, Gary, to answer your question, no. There is no filter that comes even close to this combination or sequence of filters. Most significantly, it's been upgraded from previous technology. This is a complete new technology. The metal gun in the filter was designed by a laboratory in England, and I've seen the test results. I have them right in front of me. And after reviewing them, I'm really impressed with this particular set of tests. First, according to the laboratory results, Envirotech Laboratories, they followed standards 42 and 53 protocols. They tested over 200 contaminants, including chemicals, heavy metals, pesticides, herbicides, commonly now found pharmaceutical drugs like acetaminophen, ibuprofen, and without question, almost all of these compounds were reduced or eliminated 99%+. That's unprecedented. I have not seen any laboratory tests of this caliber on any other filter that I've reviewed. I've reviewed a lot of filters. So right out of the gate, this is a remarkable filtration system. In addition, they've improved the fluoride reduction, which is very difficult. And we can get, on this test, I've seen the combination of filters get up to 99% removal of fluoride. And that's the newer fluoride, fluorosilicic acid, which is very difficult to remove. There's no other system, not even reverse osmosis, that can take out fluorosilicic acid 99%. So that, again, is an unprecedented result. Chloramine reduction, that's the newer disinfection chemicals. They're very difficult to get out. With the NSF standard 4253 protocols, this system reduced 99% of chloramine at 3 parts per million, which is a very high level. So those tests alone indicate that this system is unique. It's outstanding. And today's water systems, there's over 600 contaminants that have been detected. So anything less than the system is not going to protect you thoroughly. And I'd highly recommend this system to anyone that wants pure, clean water.
Thank you very much, Dr. Roy Spicer. Here's the deal. It's simple. $279.99. That's a tremendous discount. You're getting the newest, brand new, Gary Null Twin Slim Water Filter. And if you can find a better water filter in the world, buy it. If you can find one that's half as good as this, buy it. But if you want the best, as you know, I don't. I'll take a year to upgrade and do something right. And this is it. You want good water? Now you got good water. You want clean water? You got clean water. Give a call, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And we only have 27 of them. These are all handmade. All right? Handmade, so it takes time. In studio. Hello, Utrice.
Hello, Gary.
Now, Utrice Lead, who has a very popular show, downloaded by hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, so far.
Now over, it was over 400,000, but I think the latest figure shows you're...
We're inching toward
500,000, half a million. Much larger than your audience when you were on WBAI.
Much larger.
Now, you're going to be doing a lecture this coming Saturday at 1 o'clock.
1 o'clock.
Here at 83rd Street. What is the topic?
We're talking about the role of returning to the role of activism in a real serious way, because the tendency is to think that only the affected people need to be involved in creating change. And we need to expand that definition to see that everybody has a role to play, especially now. Oppressed people and people who are historically disfranchised, marginalized, can't do this by themselves. And we're finding a disturbing trend, but it's correctable, that people are, you know, retreating back into their own little worlds and saying, well, that doesn't really affect me, so I don't need to be involved. But Ferguson showed in very great detail the fact that a wide array of people started to become involved, and therefore it became a national and international issue.
This Saturday, 1 p.m., Utrice Lead lecturing. If you'd like to be a part of that and be inspired by it, get some new insights, give a call at 646-926-5422. You can't just show up because it's going to be packed. Her lecture last week in Brooklyn, almost 300 people, was packed. The other one packed. She hasn't been in New York in a long time. So give a call. It's $20 at the door. That all goes to Utrice because she's got to pay for a flight going back to where she came from before she came here. And that is a secret place.
A secret place, sure. Everybody knows the secret place. It's a secret place.
Anyhow, give a call at 646-926-5422, Saturday, 1 p.m. Thank you, Utrice.
And the address as well.
They'll get the address when they call the number. They'll show up here and we won't have room. As you see last night.
Right.
It was mobbed.
Yes,
every lecture is mobbed.
So great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Here's an interesting piece I found from Dr. Joseph Marcola, who does good work. I like Dr. Marcola. Every time we meet at a conference, we sit and chat about the latest on our freedoms of choice. Here's what he wrote. Quote, prescription drugs now factor in a higher percentage of fatal car crashes than alcohol or marijuana. Prescription drugs, marijuana, multiple drug combinations are frequently found in the blood of drivers involved in fatal car crashes and on U.S. roads, according to the public health reports. Drivers today are more likely to test positive for drugs than drivers 20 years ago, and drug drivers are now likely to be older than 50. Gone are the days when drunk drivers were the only concern. Alcohol is but one of many drugs that can make you dangerous behind the wheel. And now many people are on multiple drug cocktails, especially prescription drugs, which multiplies their impairment. In 1993, about 1 in 8 drivers were using more than one drug. By 2010, it was closer to 1 in 5. The number of drivers with 3 or more drugs in their system nearly doubled in this period. And beyond that, we're also seeing more and more people using drugs and alcohol together. About 70% of drivers who tested positive for cocaine also have been consuming alcohol, and almost 55% of drivers had all that in their system. So what he's saying is this, that historically we thought about dangerous people being the ones who are drinking alcohol. Now the dangerous people are older people taking medications, and those medications kill. So that's something we should be concerned with, and we're not. We're going to finish up our program today by going to Dr. Merrill Nass to give us some of the latest insights on why we should be concerned about vaccines. And I will hold my comments on natural treatments for the Ebola virus to our next program, and I will deal with it then.
Was the head of the CDC under Bush, and CDC promoted Gardasil vaccine. Gardasil's made by Merck. After she left CDC, when the Obama administration came in, she was required to wait 12 months before going to work for an industry that she had regulated as the head of CDC. And she waited exactly 12 months and then became the president of Merck Vaccines, where again her role was to market Gardasil vaccine. And Gardasil was advertised on the opening page of the CDC website, even after Gerberding had left CDC. So one doesn't really understand how these things work, but certainly industry has a huge influence on federal agencies and uses federal employees once they leave their regulatory role to influence other federal regulators. CDC even has an organization called the CDC Foundation, which is designed to get money from manufacturers to support CDC. I mean, it's rather amazing. But if you go online, you'll find there is a CDC Foundation. They get a lot of money from drug manufacturers. So who is their client? Is their client the American public and the safety of drugs and vaccines? Or is it the manufacturer? Children don't usually die suddenly when they're healthy. And you have to find a reason for that. And there are certainly lots of teenage girls who have died relatively suddenly after Gardasil or developed severe neurologic reactions. And therefore, I mean, if you're going to try to balance safety and efficacy when you prescribe something like a vaccine, you have to know how effective it's going to be. Does this really prevent cervical cancer in young women? And does it prevent it in women who've already been exposed to these viruses? And what happens after a girl gets a number of doses of this vaccine? What is the risk then of an adverse effect? Is it because each time you get another dose, you boost the number of memory cells and antibodies significantly, so that it's very likely that you could go 3 or 4 doses. Well, you get 3 initially for Gardasil, and then if it lasts, say, 5 years, which is what some people have suggested, you're getting a booster every 5 years. You may have a serious adverse reaction 5, 10, 15 years down the road from a booster. So if you know, I don't know how other doctors prescribe something like Gardasil when it's impossible to figure out what the risk-benefit equation is. Basically, they make an assumption that since the FDA has licensed it and that the manufacturer would not be taking a risk, that the manufacturer could be sued if there were a big problem, that the manufacturer would only market something that's safe, doctors go ahead and prescribe. And what they may not be aware of is that it's extremely hard to link a side effect to a vaccine for many reasons. And so getting a judgment against a manufacturer is very difficult, and it's become more difficult due to some recent litigation that reduced manufacturer liability for vaccines in general. So a paper was published written by an FDA employee that indicated a particular mathematical method was used to analyze adverse event data, and it would tell whether combinations of adverse events occurred together more frequently than would be expected for other vaccines or in general. When I asked her what the method was, well, it turned out to be proprietary. So whatever algorithm was used was developed by a company that was a contractor for FDA, and the company owned the algorithm. So here's this woman who's an MD, and she did not know how the data were being reviewed to make determinations about whether groups of adverse events were occurring together more often than expected. She had no idea what the algorithm was. She did not know whether the method had been validated. She did not know what the value of her conclusions was. You know, she had no idea how the research had been done, and yet she published a paper with these data in it. She also published in this paper said that anthrax vaccine was pretty safe. She minimized the number of adverse events that had been reported of certain kinds, and I challenged her on it, and she did not want to grapple with my challenges, but she had actually made assertions about how many adverse event reports had reported certain adverse reactions, and it so happened that I had a copy of all the adverse event reports for anthrax vaccine. And I had done the analysis with a reporter years ago, and I have updated that analysis subsequently. So I was able to challenge her and say, look, there are many times the number of adverse events that you've reported in your paper that have been submitted to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, to FDA. And so twice she had to go back and say each time, oh, I made a mistake, and then again, I made a mistake. And finally, I said, look, you know, this could be considered scientific misconduct. Here you've published a paper, and it's full of mistakes. Then her boss called me, and subsequently they published an erratum. They admitted in the journal where her paper was published that they had made these errors and corrected them. They still didn't explain how they got the data, what the algorithm was, and whether it was a valid way of analyzing data for multiple adverse reactions. But I guess one of the points I'm trying to make is that FDA should have its own algorithm for finding out whether multiple adverse events occur together at a higher frequency than expected. And FDA should be doing that analysis for every single drug and vaccine that are being licensed or that have already been licensed. I mean, the VAERS data are post-marketing reports of adverse events. And so that means all the information sent to VAERS is for vaccines that have already been licensed. And FDA needs to be studying them to find out what the adverse reactions are, because when a drug is licensed, it's usually been studied in from 1,000 to 10,000 people. And that's, everybody acknowledges, that's far too few to understand what the rare but potentially very serious adverse reactions are. There are certain times you can't sue a manufacturer virtually at all. There's an extremely strict standard for vaccines that the Secretary of HHS has designated as pandemic vaccines or emergency vaccines. Now, anthrax vaccines, smallpox vaccines, and for a year, the swine flu vaccine, they all got this designation. And so you cannot sue the manufacturer for an adverse reaction from those vaccines unless you've got permission from the Secretary of DHHS and you can show that there was clear negligence, that the manufacturer basically knew there was an adverse reaction and sold the vaccine anyway. And unless you can meet that very high bar, I mean, it's a higher standard than is required for any drug-related problems, you cannot sue. All you can do is apply to DHHS and try to collect money from them for an adverse reaction. And money's been allocated by Congress to a fund for that purpose. But DHHS has not developed standards by which you could go and collect. So in other words, let's say you developed Gulf War syndrome after getting anthrax vaccine. And this avenue is open to military service members, which is interesting, because usually they're not allowed to sue the government. But they can apply to DHHS for a payment. But DHHS is the entity that determines what the side effects are from anthrax vaccine. And DHHS employees are the ones who do the review. And there's no money designated to pay a lawyer. So if you hire a lawyer, you pay that person out of pocket. And if you don't like the decision that the DHHS employee made regarding your claim that you had a vaccine injury, it gets reviewed by another DHHS employee. And if you don't like that, you are barred from entering the court system. There is no way you can litigate your claim. So that's for emergency vaccines. So you're absolutely, pretty much absolutely barred from bringing a lawsuit. And if you do collect, the amount you get is, the maximal amount is about $300,000, which seems like a pretty large sum, but if you have a person who's been permanently disabled with a serious neurologic condition, in a child, autism, for example, or in an adult, you know, a brain injury, the cost of care for that person could reach $75,000 or $100,000 a year or more, and so the $300,000 doesn't go very far. The problem is that vaccines can exert their effects positively and negatively for a very long time. So, for example, if you get a live virus vaccine, one hopes that you will be protected throughout your life. So for a smallpox vaccine, it was shown that people had reasonable protection even 50 years after they were vaccinated. Well, obviously, if the immune system is still revved up to protect you against smallpox 50 years later, there's also the chance that that revved up immune system may be causing more autoimmune conditions than it would have otherwise. All vaccines are designed to stimulate the immune system. With killed vaccines, many include aluminum, which is used in the vaccine for several purposes, and one is to provide a depot effect so that the aluminum may bind to the antigen in the vaccine, which has the immune epitope, or the area of the molecule or the area in the virus or the bacteria that you want to develop antibodies against. And the aluminum will slowly release this antigen over many months. So you have a very prolonged effect at continual stimulation of the immune system. And it's possible that that you will still get immune stimulation years later, even from a killed vaccine. So you would think that adverse reactions may develop many months or even years later. But vaccine trials usually last 30 to 60 days. With Gardasil, some of the trials that the manufacturer required did go out to 6 months. And by requiring the manufacturer to conduct a pregnancy registry for several years, and some of the trials did go out for years, they were going to collect data for a longer period. But most vaccines that are now on the market that have been licensed for a long time had very minimal data collection for safety. So that the original data collection for anthrax vaccine from what's called the Brockman trial, which is the trial that FDA has said is the main trial they used for safety and efficacy, they looked at safety issues for 48 hours in that trial. That's it. Everybody got their arm examined at 24 and 48 hours. And it wasn't even believed that vaccines could cause long-term adverse reactions. So there isn't a good data set that one can examine now to find out whether anthrax vaccine causes long-term side effects. FDA doesn't have access to such a data set. The military has its own data. So it has a collection of hospital visits and outpatient visits for all military service members and the diagnoses that were given for those visits, and it has a list of all the vaccinations. The military doesn't share that database. That database was created by Congress after the fiasco of Gulf War Syndrome, when it was very difficult to say what vaccines people received and what illnesses they then got. And so Congress gave the military money and said, you've got to create this database, which is called the Defense Medical Surveillance System. And the military promised that they would make these data available for analysis, but they have not.
Now, that was Dr. Merrill Nass, medical doctor. I first met Dr. Nass when I was doing an article on Gulf War Syndrome. And at that time, I had interviewed well over 300 vets of the 1991 war in Iraq. And these were vets who had terrible symptoms, and yet they were not being helped by the government, by the VA, by the Defense Department at all, because they claimed that there was no biological or chemical weapons used. I did a film on the vets that showed that there were biological and chemical weapons used. Let me just give you a little background on this. I interviewed a whole group from a company that one night said that they heard the sirens go off, then they looked up and they saw the yellow flashes in the air, Scud missiles. And then within about a minute, they all said that this powder started landing, this yellowish powder, and started burning their skin and their lungs and their face, and everybody was rushing to wash it off, and many of the people could not breathe. And then the next day, these special group of people came in the hazmat, and they started to clean everything up. They had bulldozers scraping away the sand, and all the people's uniforms were taken, and they were told that this didn't happen. And one of the sergeants that I interviewed said, I was told specifically by a colonel, this never happened. And the sergeant said, Colonel, our whole group here has been impacted by this biological agent. And the guy said again, this never happened. Then I had, and then one of the people who was in that company said that he got blisters all over his chest, and the blisters didn't go away. And then he got them on his back, much like a chicken pox. And then another group of people I interviewed said that they didn't even get to Iraq. They got the 10 experimental vaccines, including the anthrax vaccine and the botulism vaccine that she was just discussing, and they got deadly ill. And they had sweats, they had massive diarrhea, and their lungs began to become congested. Clearly it was the vaccines, and yet no soldier was ever told what was in the vaccines. Then others, this was really unusual, They found one of the old biological weapons camps that Saddam Hussein had in the desert. And it showed them, and a GI was photographing them, you know, going in, no protective outfit at all. And it was filming. Now, here's what was interesting. When he did a close-up of his camera, the biological agents made in USA. And you could see one weapon after another, one crate after another, made in USA. Now, I would later prove in the article that we were selling Saddam Hussein weapons of mass destruction to use against Iran and their eight-year war, that we were also supplying both sides with intelligence, but we were supplying Iraq with weapons, including weapons of mass destruction, which was in contravention of the Geneva Accords and treaties on biological weapons. In any case, so they find this stuff, and then you got 100 or so GIs standing around, and they blow it up. And as they blow it up, this one GI, and this is, I got the exclusive film of this from this guy, you see this yellow-orange cloud go up in the shape of a donut, and it hangs in the air for about 2 minutes, about the size of maybe 50 to 80 feet across, but it's a perfect circle. Normal dispersion, when you blow something up, that never happens. It just, everything goes in every direction. So there was proof that they were using used biological weapons. They blew them up, and no protection whatsoever for those vets. All of those vets got sick. Then that carried all that biological material downwind and impacted over 100,000 people, including all of American soldiers who were downwind 100, 200, 300 miles. It went right over the bases. Those people end up getting sick. Everyone covered it up, including Colin Powell and Schwarzkopf. Everyone covered it up. Isn't it interesting? Just recently, they discovered another one of those in 2006. And again, no protection for the people handling it. And now those people are claiming they are sick and they got migraines and they're bleeding. And now that's in the public domain. My information, which is in an award-winning film, Gulf War Veterans, Killing Our Own, never the mainstream media, though I sent them all copies of the film, not one person ever reviewed that. So much for caring about our vets. But it was Dr. Merrill Nass who did the research as a scientist and found that there was an experimental adjuvant called in the vaccines called squalene that is not approved nor allowed in any human vaccine, and that it was in every one of those vets. And guess what? The 70,000 vet records all disappeared. And of course, no one followed up and questioned it. So she's got a lot to say about vaccines. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more on our next program. Have a nice day. Now, sitting in studio in New York City, live and in person, is the one and only. That you enjoy hearing every day, Utrece Lead. Hi, Utrece.
Hello, Gary. It's great being with you, and it's great being with the audience from these wonderful studios, PRN. It's my first time being here, and it's just fantastic. It's been fantastic.
Utrece, before you get into your program, I just want people to know that it's been a long time since you've been in the city to give talks. And this past week, you have been giving talks on empowering the listeners, and you've had packed houses. This coming Saturday, because you're going back on Sunday to your home, but this coming Saturday, you're going to be giving a talk here at our studios.
Right.
We can accommodate about 50 people. And our number, if you want to come and meet Utrece Lead and listen to her words of wisdom, which will be at 1 o'clock Saturday, our number to call is 646-926-5422. 646-926-5422. What are you going to talk about?
I'm talking about the need to revive this business of shared responsibility for where we go as a society. We've seen in the past couple of years retreat back into our respective bunkers. And if a problem doesn't really immediately affect us, we just kind of push it aside. But increasingly, we see that the problems we thought wouldn't affect us and are, in fact, no respecters of boundaries anymore. They're affecting everybody. The issue of the police militarization affecting everybody. I was just reading a story about the police being very hard on performers in the subway and arresting one, and they had the people of the community had a concert in his behalf, but really in recognition of the shared problem that they have. And so the issues that we thought were applying only to this group over here, to that group over there, they're now applying across the board. So it's a time for people to really understand that it is important to recognize that the progress requires everybody's input. And especially, we have to bridge that divide again. Even in the progressive community, we've seen a retreat. And I think because we get a good deal of reaction on lead stories, people recognizing the need to come together again and to recognize that society is all of us and we have to do something together. There are things that we have to do separately, but there are things that we must do together.
Absolutely agree. That's this Saturday, her final day in New York for this long trip. It's been years and years since she's been here. You won't want to miss Utrice Lead. Give a call, 646-926-5422, 1 o'clock Saturday afternoon. Have a good show.
Thank you very much, Gary. Thanks a lot.